Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Bald Move Prestige podcast. And this is going to be a re-release of our podcast for last year's Bald Movie award-winning film, A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, which, hey, if you haven't seen it before, you should, because it's a great antidote for the cynicism of today. And this is going to be the first chance for non-club members to hear our spoiler take for this movie. So, as mentioned in the Dunkirk re-release that we did previously, this year marks our sixth annual Baldies Awards, the upcoming celebration in February. I'm not going to repeat the whole spiel because you can just go back and listen to the first 15 minutes of Dunkirk if you want to hear it. But we're using this lead up to this year's Baldy Awards show to crown Mega Baldies from all the previous winners of the five main categories. Last week we did Best Comedy. This week we're going to determine the last 5 years who was the best male actor. Of course, the Baldies, as I said, coming out in February, so keep on the watch for that, especially because there's always a listener choice kind of poll that we're going to be announcing the links for that in the upcoming weeks on podcasts and the show notes section, on Twitter, that kind of thing. So just be on the lookout if you want your voice heard in selecting the very best of 2020 pop culture and entertainment, or at least as far as Bald Move is concerned. Jim, you're here.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about best male actor.
And the
here
winner
is the list.
Is... Oh, okay.
Here's the list. For 2015, Justin Theroux won for Kevin Garvey Jr., Leftovers Season 2. 2016, Anthony Hopkins as Dr. Robert Ford, Westworld Season 1. 2017, Justin Theroux as Kevin Garvey Jr., The Leftovers Season 3. 2018, Jared Harris as Captain Francis Crozier from AMC's The Terror. And in 2019, last year, we had Rami Malek as Elliot Alderson from the finale season of Mr. Robot. This is a tough category, man.
Yeah.
Movies are kind of a little bit all over because, you know, you got some things I personally like more in science fiction and some things I kind of, but like these are all like tippy top excellent, beat out 10 other dudes each year to get to this point. And I love all of these shows and all of these performances. What the hell are we going to do?
Yeah,
what's
your
thoughts?
When we're actually debating each year's Baldies, it's easy to start eliminating stuff right off the bat because there's good stuff, there's bad stuff. This is all good stuff. So like, mm-hmm. how do you even really start? I think I can start. Unfortunately, and these are all going to be hard cuts, but by eliminating Rami Malek.
I'm sorry. I was going to go for Jared Harris.
Oh, see? Okay. I was debating whether or not to start off this discussion with there are really only two picks here. And they're Justin Theroux and Anthony Hopkins, but it sounds like we both are coming to that organically. So,
unless you have a strong
defense of Malik,
Justin Theroux casting, shall we say, long shadow over the category, soaking up two of the top spots. I guess the only problem with Jared Harry here on the Terry. Is that it's a miniseries. It's a one shot. He created this indelible character. It's an amazing character. It's an amazing performance, but it's only one piece of work. And I find myself, even though that's not fair, I find myself like when I think of Rami Malek on Mr. Robot, I don't think of just his final season. And it had some great, you know, that one five act play that they pulled off. But I think of like what he did throughout the entirety of that series.
Sure.
Same thing with Justin Theroux. Like Justin Theroux season 2 versus season 3 kind of all blend together with season 1. Anthony Hopkins is a little bit more one-to-one comparison, but also he is just a legend. And he brought 100% of his skills and ability to this role that is in a, you know, mind fuck of a series. And he kind of sold that twist that kind of blew us all away in that first season and always kept us guessing. Mm-hmm. So that's how I see it.
I will say there's not a lot of range in any of these characters, right? Like, and I'm not saying the actors don't have it, but the characters don't require it.
You don't think Justin, like Kevin Garvey Jr.? Like rage, sorrow, joy, incredulity.
Joy, I'm struggling to remember any scenes where he experienced joy.
Sob singing. There's a couple cute moments with Nora and
it's mostly just
the kids.
Grief and despair and that kind of shit.
And what the hell is going on? Yeah,
and
there's
confusion,
a lot of that. Yeah, yeah.
For sure. Or like Anthony Hopkins is just like this smug, I don't even know how to describe it. The guy who knows everything about everything and is just waiting for you to catch up if you can, sort of thing.
Yeah. He's a deep old file. I just come back to when I think of, I'm trying to think of like the defining moment of all these characters. I honestly can't even think of the defining moment of Jared Harris on The Terror. It's more of just like the overall excellence, but I can't think of like a standout scene where, you know, Rami Malek, of course, you know, I just saw this last year, but like when I mentioned his, five act play that he did with, God, I've already forgotten the character. Gloria Rubin, his therapist, mm-hmm. and the king in New York City. I think of that, in particular, that scene where he makes, I'm not going to spoil it because it's only a year old, but he makes a certain connection about the basic truth of his existence, and holy shit, he poured a soul out into that. Justin Theroux, I think of Homeward Bound.
Absolutely. That's a defining scene for this series.
And how, like, that, like, oh my God, that scene just completely just destroyed me. And I think of him like this, you know, we didn't have the Baldies in season one, but I think of him like carrying Jill out of the burning building. I think of things like that. And it's, I just don't know that it's possible for these other gentlemen to compete with that moment. You know, but Anthony Hopkins,
yeah.
Like I think of like how he was able to play these things, like how he played like he didn't care about the robots, you know, he made very points to dehumanize them. And but then, you know, like I remember like going back three or four different times about like his character and what he was all about and what it all meant. I don't know if many other people could do that.
And he makes the standout for him is that final scene of his final scene of season one of Westworld, where he gives the speech in front of, you know, all mm-hmm. these investors and whatnot. And then, you know, Dolores starts her attack kind of stuff that mm-hmm. I don't know of another actor who could have brought me to the emotional space I needed to be in at that point. And it was the linchpin of the entire season. If that scene doesn't work, the season kind of doesn't work. So
yeah,
it requires the talents of a legendary actor, and Anthony Hopkins is one.
Yeah, and I think that the one knock I could give on Justin Theroux, because you're right, Anthony Hopkins, I struggle to think of who else could carry that particular peculiar role. Justin Theroux, I feel like kind of just a guy. He's very, very good. Don't get me wrong. But like, I could probably think of five leading men in Hollywood that could have done that role. You know, like this good looking yeah. everyman that carries himself like he doesn't have a care in the world. But deep down, he's this roiling thing of emotion. But you know what? Five of the guys didn't play that role. It was Justin Theroux. And, you know, he had on several occasions had to dig deep and bring it. And he did. And also, since I know Justin Theroux is not an unknown quantity, but he was for me, like, you know, The Leftovers was my real first introduction to guys like Christopher Eccleston,
yeah.
Justin Theroux, of course, Nora Durst. Carrie Coon, Regina King, like I'd not like these people were just people. They were just characters to me. Whereas if you had Jude Law or Matt Damon, in that role, there would have been initial kind of like, oh my God, it's Jude Law and Matt Damon, you know, mm-hmm. a little bit of the stunt casting. I want to give it 2015 Justin Theroux season two.
Well, I feel like he's got the advantage here because he's won twice, and so you have two seasons of consideration here.
Yeah, he's covering the board. Yeah.
Yeah. And I, yeah, I'm trying to think like whether I appreciate Justin Theroux doing his just a guy sort of thing. Cause I agree with you. Like I didn't know much about Justin Theroux. I'm sure I had seen him in a role here or there.
Zoolander.
Sure. I had definitely seen Zoolander before I saw season right. one of The Leftovers.
Scott Pilgrim, right? Was he one of the vegan? No, wait.
No,
he
that's
wasn't.
Roush. That's a Routh. I don't know. Superman, whatever. And Thomas Jane.
Oh, not only that, but Thomas Jane. Thomas Jane. I got Thomas yeah. Jane and Justin Theroux confused.
Oh. How? Okay.
I just did it.
I'm kind of leaning toward Justin Theroux. I mean, I think of like episodes like International Assassin. You mentioned the Homeward Bound scene, which is one of the finest scenes of any show I've ever seen. And one of the finest performances. Like that transition from extraordinarily confused dream world guy into I don't know, like he really like sells all of the emotional weight of everything that's happened to him coming home in this one season, and yeah, I could think of other actors that could do that, but he did it, like you said, and it got me. Like it's one of those scenes that gets me, you know. Not many scenes in film get me. There are a couple in like Big Fish that get me. The Homeward Bound is one of those scenes, man.
Right. And that's like you mentioned Big Fish, and I know what you're talking about. But that kind of draws on your personal relationship and your personal experience, where it's like it's so weird because everything is so conceptual and metaphysical on The Leftovers. I can't say that I directly connected with Kevin Garvey's material. I felt like I was always more sympathetic to Mrs. Garvey and what she was going through with the cult and things like that. Christopher Eccleston trying to figure out what to do with this faith when it's been fractured. Mm-hmm. But even then, like, man, it just made that instant through line connection of a man who's, like you said, he's dealing with all this crazy shit and he just decides to give in and accept, like, okay, whatever. And like, I mean, it's just like that's like a 2 minute thing where he like goes on an emotional journey as he's singing this song. It's great. It's great. It feels like something out of a David Lynch film, but it works.
Okay. Yeah. And I know Justin Theroux is not like a singer, right? He's not an amazing singer, but he's a passable singer. And it works in that moment. But that's more of just like, he's a dude, right?
He's just a guy. Yeah.
He's not a superstar talent in that world. He's just a dude. I could get down with Justin Theroux probably for season two, because it does have International Assassin and it does have that Homeward Bound scene.
Yeah, we'll probably be talking about this in Best Dramatic Series because, spoiler alert, The Leftovers also covers the field a bit in that category. But right. It's going to be tough between season two and season three.
Yeah. We'll go into more depth on that.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, we've already been talking for quite a long time. Let's get to Tom Hanks as Fred Rogers in A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. Hope you guys enjoy that and hope you come in next week for the next Baldy movie winner and a discussion of the female actors that have lit up our screen the last 5 years. Be on the lookout for the People's Choice Awards coming out on the podcast, on the social media, and we'll see you next time. Here's what's new in premium content for our club members.
Executive producers get to exercise their voting fingers again this week with another prestige movie poll. This week's nominees are Mystic River, The Last Samurai, and Secondhand Lions. Take your pick and seal our fate.
This Monday on the Premium feed, we open up the books and deliver a State of the Empire podcast, talking about the current condition of Bald Move and our plans for this year.
This Friday, it's Lunch 420, which given last weekend seems like a tragic missed opportunity. Ah, well. Lunch will be served piping hot at 1 p.m. Eastern. Come join live or warm up some leftovers when lunch is released in podcast form later that day.
If you want more Bald Move in your life, head over to support.baldmove.com to find out how you can get tons of bonus audio and video content, plus ad-free feeds. You've been listening to quite a few Bald Move podcasts now, but you're not in a club? Whoo boy, you are missing out.
Not only are all of our premium club podcast feeds completely ad-free, but we have lots of other great content exclusively for people in the club.
There's a weekly lunch with Jim and Aaron where we chat with fans about anything and everything from TV and films, food, fun, life advice, and more.
But there's also Off the Clock, our premium podcast where we talk about all the shows we don't have time for on our public feeds.
Plus, you get access to our full spoiler-filled first-run movie reviews of our newly released films.
Don't forget Instant Take and Talk podcast, where we give our hot takes and discuss television shows with our fans live and immediately after the episode airs.
With mega shows like House of the Dragon coming this summer, we're going to have lots to talk about.
Not to mention access to our fun and friendly community of club members, with exclusive Discord channels and a dedicated forum. It's one of the best places on the internet to hang out and chat about pop culture.
Bottom line, you're helping two regular type guys in the Midwest make the content you like to listen to, which some would say is rewarding to itself.
Help keep the lights on and the bits flowing at Bald Move.
And get some awesome content for yourself. Head to support.baldmove.com to join the club today. Everybody, welcome to another First Run Bald Movies. We've got a treat tonight. Jim and I went to the cinema to see a film.
The Cinemark, even.
Called A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. It's directed by Marielle Heller, who directed Diary of a Teenage Girl, and also Can You Ever Forgive Me? Is Melissa Hartman? No.
Joan Hart?
No, who is it? Melissa? Oh, the Melissa McCarthy film. And that's been on my HBO watch list for a while. I've kind of was tempering my expectation because I was really excited about this because last year I saw that Fred Rogers documentary, Won't You Be My Neighbor? And I read this article about around that time, the article that this film's based on. And then I started hearing things like, oh, there's only like 20 minutes of Fred Rogers in it. And it's really not about him so much as about this journalist and his story. So I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to dial back because I thought this was more of a biopic. I left the movie very pleasantly surprised. I found this a very emotionally effective and pretty amazing film. What'd you think?
I wasn't pleasantly surprised, but I was pleased. I love this movie. I think it's great. This is the kind of movie that if you're estranged from your parents, perhaps, makes you want to call them up and say, hey,
yeah, no,
can we fix this whole situation, you know?
Yeah, I totally get that vibe. And it is disarming. I definitely want to talk about that. But also, there's a lot like watching Mr. Rogers itself. There's a few things where the film started doing a particular thing, and I'm like, there's no fucking way this is going to work. This is going to be the dumbest thing I've ever seen. And then like midway through it, I'm like, my God, I know exactly what they're doing. And it's exactly what Mr. Rogers did.
I'm curious to see which parts you think they are in the spoiler section, because there's something structurally about this thing that I want to talk about that is really, really good.
Yeah. No, the whole framing device.
But I don't want to give anything away because like discovering that was part of the process of watching this movie.
I agree. I thought it was the thing that surprised me is because I have seen the Fred Rogers documentary and I have seen the article or have read the article. Mm. And there's another one that came out this week. I'm going to link all these in the show notes. An article in the New York Times about Tom Hanks. That's pretty feel good story about his experience making this movie in his life. But I was amazed at how much liberty I felt like they took with the article that this was based on, this guy's story. Like, I felt like they really punched it up in a lot of places and they changed the order of things and they amped up the story. Not in a way that was like offensive. And I think it's a great primer to like kind of the man behind Mr. Rogers and the effect that he had on people.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think it might inspire a lot of people to check out the documentary and to read the article. And because one thing I want to talk about maybe in the spoiler section is it possible to found like a secular religion based on the life of Fred Rogers?
Is it possible to found an art school on Bob Ross?
Yeah, you absolutely then fucking
okay,
could.
Then you could do it around Mr. Rogers as well. Yes.
I mean, like, you know, like, not saying that he's divine or anything, but this man, like, what really impressed me about Mr. Rogers, and it comes across in all the really serious, deep pieces you've seen, is not that he was a saint or that he was mm-hmm. some perfect human being, just that he really practiced and studied being a good human being.
Yeah.
And worked at it like a hobby or like a vocation or mm-hmm. a calling. And you when you watch that and you start to realize that, it's like, why don't we all do that? I think, you know, like,
well, they make it clear in the movie, it's hard work.
It is very hard.
You know, it's
work.
Not something that just comes naturally to him. It's something he practices.
Yeah.
So I think that's why we don't do it. Because
it's hard.
It's hard.
That's depressing,
yeah,
but accurate. And yeah. The thing is, like, I wonder, like, if in the, like, is our, like, if Fred Rogers a singular person, or is, like, he an outlier that shows us what's possible and that, like, we can bend the human arc towards that direction? Because, my God, what couldn't we accomplish if we were, like, a half as compassionate and empathetic as Fred Rogers?
Yeah. No, I mean, I my relationship with Mr. Rogers uh-huh. is one that is now 30 years old, mm-hmm. and 30 years in my past. It's not like I've, you know, binge watched Mr. Rogers anytime yeah. lately.
Yeah.
So I have like vague, fuzzy memories of the show that were good memories, and I remember liking it and enjoying what I'd seen of it. But it's been so long that I forgot, you know, most of the stuff that he did
yeah.
in that show.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, seeing this movie is sort of a reminder, oh, yeah, like, Fred Rogers probably should have been a bigger part of my childhood. Like, mm-hmm. I came away from this movie going, looking at children's entertainment.
Yes.
And saying, you could show your child Fred Rogers stuff,
mm-hmm.
or you could show your child Dragon Ball Z mm-hmm. and fucking Yu-Gi-Oh! And Pokemon. And maybe there are some okay lessons to learn from
sure.
those shows, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they're nowhere near the lessons that Mr. Rogers was trying to teach children.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's not even about like, oh, he raises topics, but he sort of like seemingly gives children permission to feel the things they're feeling.
Yeah.
And that's like super important when you have parents who are saying, you know, you need to act right, or you need mm-hmm. to behave, or like, you need to like stop doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, don't process why you're doing it and the feelings behind it. Just stop it.
Or acknowledge the validity of those things.
Right.
But also acknowledge the importance of channeling those into healthy directions. And
right. So seeing this movie is like, oh man, now I truly get what Mr. Rogers was all about.
Yeah. And because I remember,
and I don't know if that's a false impression of, you know, given to me by a movie that is loosely based on Mr. Rogers or what.
I watched a lot of Mr. Rogers from a very young age. In fact, yeah. I don't remember a time where I didn't watch Mr. Rogers. And because my brother, like, as I was growing out of Mr. Rogers, then my sister came along because
right.
we had a pretty big, and then 3 years later, my little brother came along and I would watch it. You know, so by the time my brother came along, I was like a teenager, like a 12, 13 year old. And I'd watch, you know, like I'd kind of like, you know, be reading a book and he'd be on in the background and I'd be like, oh, brother, Jesus. But then sometimes like I'd remember, like I'd see things I saw as a kid, like when he came home and his pet fish had died.
Oh,
and yeah. you know, he did the whole thing. He scooped it out and he said, you know, I read somewhere that sometimes you can give a fish like a bath and some salt water and that'll revive them. And kind of it's like a treatment for them. And he tried that and he spends like 5 to 10 minutes on this fucking fish. And then like, you know, has like a little, you know, talks about death and how some everything dies. And mm-hmm. and I remember watching as a kid and thinking like, this is blowing my mind. But then watching my little brother watch it. And it's like I said, it's just this weird show where like this guy seems ridiculous until you start listening to him talk. And there's
yeah.
I don't want to spoil anything because there's so many things I want to say in like the articles and documentary, but they weave a lot of that into the movie. And he's just a really fascinating guy. And I remember like
you know, I do this new political show, and in the first 2 weeks, the idea of like, you know, positive masculinity has come up and been a topic discussion. And I think, like, what a different way to be a man that Fred Rogers was. Mm-hmm. But like something that's universally beloved and respected. Like, he commanded respect from people. Yeah. He wasn't. There's a line in the article that this is based on where he's talking an experience of where Mr. Rogers, like, he was in a room and some people like initially weren't taking him serious. And he said there was a point where the room realized that this was not some eunuch. Mm-hmm. That was going to be like shuffled off, that he was an authority figure and that he was used to being respected and listened to. And he's like, just kind of like waited for the room to realize that too. And then once he had him, he continued. I'm like,
yeah,
how the fuck do you do that with this manner about you?
Right. Because he's very quiet.
Yeah.
He's very measured in his responses at all times.
And you think it's one of those guys where it's like, is this guy for real? But once you realize he's for real, and that's like, man, that documentary is the, it really went into like, you know, he had a bunch of beatnik hippie crew that was kind of on the wide, but they loved and respected him. And he wasn't like, you know, he could laugh and joke with them. But also, this is very serious what we're doing. We have to take the work seriously. And what a righteous dude, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Seems like a cool guy.
Here's
the thing. I came in here when I saw who was, what company was contributing to this, and I was prepared to just tear it to pieces.
What was that?
Tencent. Do you know anything about Tencent?
No, I do not.
They own like 40% of Epic or something, and they're all over Fortnite. They own like 100% of League of Legends, Riot
video
games. Yeah,
and they made a Mr. Rogers movie.
They're like they're one of the biggest companies in the world.
Whoa.
Like one of the biggest entertainment companies in the world, based out of China. And I was like, well, they're just fucking strip mining nostalgia for profit here.
Oh, Tencent.
Tencent.
Oh, Tencent.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, then, yeah, I still don't. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm amazed. I haven't like this. This is all new to me.
I listen to Giant Bomb a lot.
All right.
They talk about him. So I was prepared to come in here and rip it.
Mm-hmm.
At least from that angle, but it's hard to like take anything away from this when it's such an honest film. Like I really felt like they were not trying to portray Mr. Rogers in a certain light. Mm-hmm. They were just showing me the man that he is.
Mm-hmm.
And the effect that he has on people around him with this narrative they were constructing. So like, I don't know. Yes, they're going to make money on this.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that's wrong with the film they've made.
Well, I mean, that's one of the silver linings to these giant soul-sucking companies is every once in a while they fuck around and give money to the right project and do something amazing.
Yeah.
You know? Shit, might as well celebrate the wins while we got them.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, I feel like saying more about the look of the film and like the way that some of the cinematic techniques would take away from. I will say that like there's the opening scene. The first time you see Tom Hanks as Mr. Rogers, and he's he's singing "It's a Beautiful Day," and you know how it goes, and he's doing the clothes, and I'm like, there's something manic a little bit that I don't remember about Fred Rogers, like almost like Tom Hanks is nervous doing this.
I imagine you gotta be.
Yeah, and like it's like hard to do like what the things, and then like after he got through the song, he turns to like this prop, and I'm like, oh, as he made that turn, I'm like, oh, wow, he just nailed it.
Yeah.
Like, it was like a little uncanny valley Fred Rogers. And then for the rest of the movie, like, I thought Tom Hanks did an amazing characterization of Mr. Rogers. He doesn't particularly look like Mr. Rogers. I mean, they help him along the makeup.
Yeah, not particularly.
But
sure.
The voice and the mannerism and the, you know.
And the presence. I mean,
there you go.
Like, yeah, him on camera as Mr. Rogers, I think, worked incredibly well.
Mm-hmm.
I lost Tom Hanks at some point in this movie.
Yeah.
And I just saw Fred Rogers.
Yeah. Yeah. He does that a lot. He's a very good character actor in addition to so many other things. And he's got comic timing, which he gets the.
Oh, right.
I wouldn't have expected to see like comic timing Tom Hanks, SNL star performer Tom Hanks. Used to be everyone known him as a funny guy. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't expect that in a Mr. Rogers movie, but he did some like really fun. He had some fun with it.
Absolutely.
As Mr. Rogers did himself. What do you think about Matthew
Reese?
Reese, yeah.
Yeah, fantastic.
Uh-huh.
He was... I don't want to give too much away, but he was exactly what he needed to be in this show.
Yeah.
This movie.
Yeah, I've always, like... I like him a lot, and I loved his performance in Americans, but I ultimately didn't like the Americans. Really hated the asshole he played in, like, I forget what season it was, as Girls, but I'm glad that I finally saw a performance of his that was, like, long form, and I just felt, like, unconflicted in how much I loved it.
Yeah.
I thought he did, a really good job. I mean, that's the other thing, is I felt like I learned a lot about being a son, and I also kind of learned a lot about being a father. From this movie. I mean, that sounds pretty hokey for an hour and a half movie, but I think it's true.
Yeah.
I think it's true.
Yeah.
Like I said, the way you're talking about, like, you know, family and stuff, it's that's a hell of a movie, have an impact like that.
I agree.
Do you want to get into the trailers?
Let's do it.
Okay.
So I have a ton.
I saw for the first time, the new trailer for Cats.
Yes, I did too.
Jim, I startled the room yesterday in the Bald Move headquarters when I screamed, didn't I?
You did.
I screamed. I'm like, what the fuck? What the fuck? I saw a headline where apparently they spent $300 million.
And we had to legitimately go and research whether this was the most expensive movie ever made.
$300 million.
It almost is.
And Jim, I... can't impress upon you how much this thing makes no fucking sense. I've seen the play live. I told Cecily, I saw this like I was a 23 and it's like a fucking fever dream. And she's like, oh, it can't be like that. We rented it off Amazon, the Broadway recording of it. It's even incomprehensible because when I saw it live, I was up in the nosebleed sections of the Aronoff, and like it was these cats running around, and when you're a Jellicoe cat, you go Jellicoe fat, and like what the hell is going on? But seeing everything in motion and getting subtitles, I still don't know what the fuck is going on.
Yeah,
they're magical cats, and
I mean Ian
they
McKellen,
get taken up in spaceships.
Idris Elba, Dame Judi Dench,
McCavity. Do you know about McCavity?
No.
He's an evil cat. Do you know how? You know
is that, James
that
Gordon?
He's evil? Because every once in a while, the cats just kind of hiss and go, McCavity! For 30 seconds.
Here's the thing.
Yeah?
They can spend $300 million on this movie, because I guarantee this thing is going to make $1 billion on perverts alone.
I didn't think about the furry vote.
I mean, it's Idris Elba covered in hair with no... groin to speak of. People are going to go wild for this
shit. Yeah, and the lady perverts, cats are all shapes and sizes colors.
Idris, so they've got James Corden for you.
You want a butch cat? They got butch cat. You want a little Fimmy kind of like, you know, cute K-pop the cat? They got that. It's all shapes and sizes.
Sure.
When you're a Jellicoe cat, you can Jellicoe get it, I guess. Jellicoe. I don't know.
It's good.
I'll tell you another thing. Me and Seth are going to see this thing. We're going to fucking do a podcast on it.
I'll tell you something. I'm not.
There's not a doubt in my mind we're going to do that.
Yeah, I can't wait.
Michael B. Jordan and Jamie Foxx. Did you see this Just Mercy?
I did. Yeah, this looks awesome.
It looks awesome, but what's it about?
It's about a man who's been wrongly convicted, sent to death row, and Michael B. Jordan is going to fight for him.
That's literally all.
It's about racism in Alabama, and it's got Looking Glass
it's
in
Alabama.
It.
Okay, yeah. It's got Brie Larson in it. It's got Tim Blake Nelson, who we're really enjoying on The Watchmen. Mm-hmm. I'm really looking forward to seeing it. But I don't know what else to say about it. Did you see Harrison Ford?
Call of the Wild.
In Call of the Wild?
I saw Harrison Ford. I saw with a drummer from The Expanse. And I saw a CG dog.
Yeah.
Which was a little off-putting.
Yeah.
It's in that uncanny valley.
Uh-huh. Well, so I remember my dad gave me when I was... like a young man, a copy of like a collection of Jack London novels.
Gotcha.
It was a twin edition of Call of the Wild and White Fang. Mm-hmm. And I remember reading them both and just like being amazed by how but I thought that Call of the Wild was more about like, maybe that's White Fang. Maybe I'm getting White Fang confused. But I thought the Call of the Wild was more about like a young boy and a dog and an adventure.
Not an 80-year-old man.
Yeah, I'm delighted. It's a very curious choice to pair him up with a CG dog that's like doing bits and things. Like, it's a weird choice, but I like the source material, and it's Harrison Ford. How many times do you see Harrison Ford grumble out of retirement and do something?
Right. I mean, it's probably just because they said, look, Harrison, you can come in, you can be a loner out in the woods, you don't have to talk to anybody, we'll just put a camera, you know, the minimum of 100 feet away from you. We'll give you a green screen pet.
He thought that his agent, there's how they got him, his agent called him up and said, hey, it's a hell of a thing. It turns out you actually owe a couple more pages of performance for Star Wars. We're going to get you in, do some insert shots with a Chewbacca. They get some guy in a green sock. And he just thinks he's on Star Wars.
Right.
He's in, what is this, fucking Hoth? There's a lot of snow here. I'm hooking a sled up to Chewie. It seems kind of kinky and weird. But yeah, it's the only answer. Sonic the Hedgehog.
I saw this. I think this doesn't look bad.
Really?
Yeah, now that they've redone Sonic, the movie looks perfectly passable. I was impressed with how much like Sonic it felt. Sound effects, visuals, like,
and then Sonic does look like Sonic. I can't believe this was a hard decision. I can't believe like what led to the thing. I guess they spent $30 million on fixing this. I saw like the worst take on Twitter ever, which is, wow, you know, the studio spent $30 million to fix a fan complaint. We got to support this movie, or like, what is our criticism even worth? And I'm like, well, yeah, but like I said when this debacle first happened, I think we talked about this on lunch, like the same people that made Sonic the Hedgehog a nightmare, abomination, are the same people that made the plot and cast and everything else about this movie and thought it was a good idea. So until I see this film is actually passable, I'm still going to suspect it's a giant turd. And I thought I saw a lot of giant turds, even though you're right. They nailed the Sonic part of it.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like the overall plot kind of smells turdy.
He's just got to go fast, man.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it's obviously a kid's movie. I'm not going to rush out to see it. But if it happens to cross my path in the future, I don't know if I'll be disappointed, but I won't be reluctant to sit down and watch it.
Jumanji 2.
Saw that one too. Yeah.
I loved the first Jumanji remake. I thought it was more fun than the original, and I quite liked the original, and I think this is going to be a hell of a lot of fun. Can't wait to see it.
Yeah, looks
probably not a bald movie, but it's a good family film. Did you see any of these chick flicks, let's call them? Little Women.
Yeah, that and Emma, I'm sure you're going to talk about. Yeah, I saw both of those.
Were you in the same theater as me?
Yes.
Oh, well, fuck. I would have handled this a completely different way if I'd realized that. I've not read these books. Like, I've always heard of Little Women and Emma, and I've read quite a bit of Jane Austen. And, of course, you know, I've read a lot of Patrick O'Brien, which is a kind of the masculine side of that coin. I'm kind of amazed I haven't seen either of these movies. I'm really, they look great. They have a lot of star power, like Saoirse Ronan. And did you see Mary Queen of Scots?
No.
I think that came to HBO last month, and I watched it on a whim, and because it's something that's kind of interested. It has, was it Margot Robbie? No, is it Margot Robbie playing the Queen Elizabeth? The first,
was that like the Knight's Tale, kind of like modern?
No, it's very like period accurate.
They've been releasing a lot of
intriguey and
that period stuff.
I thought she was amazing in it. It's got Emma Watson, Eliza Scanlon. Did you recognize her?
I did see Sharp Objects. Yeah.
Yeah. Sharp Objects girl. Yep. It looks really good. And Jane Austen, Emma rather.
Yeah, I think Little Women looked real good. Emma,
why not
was
Emma?
Meh.
Just because it didn't have the star power, or because like why? I'm trying to think.
I don't know. Yeah. It was something about the tone of it. I was like not as into it as Little Women.
A little more frivolous, perhaps.
Yeah, definitely.
More of a comedy. Yeah, I'll probably end up checking them all out. But
did you see Last Christmas with Emilia Clarke?
No, I didn't.
Must have been before you got there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We had an experience.
It's a
leading up to this movie.
Oh boy.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
Yeah. Well. Rom-com Emilia Clarke.
Oh, was it Last Christmas?
It's Christmas, yeah.
Yes, yes. I have seen this trailer, and I am very excited to see this movie.
You are? Because I'm very not. But it's, it's not my type of movie.
This is part like, this is something me and Cecily are into now. Mm. What?
Oh, no.
The engineering booth vigorously shaking her head. No, I thought that something we were in
I was told.
Are these ironically terrible Christmas movies, but apparently one of us is too cool for school in 2019.
Hmm. Yeah.
Hmm. Oh, so we're the line we're drawing is we're not paying for terrible Christmas movies. We only watch them free on Hallmark.
Yeah.
All right. I mean, but HBO is getting into the game. I mean, not HBO. Netflix is getting into the game. They've got, they got a bunch of terrible Christmas stuff coming. It's a great time. It's a great time to be alive. Is there any other trailers?
Nope.
That is all the trailers for tonight. If you would like to join us in Mr. Rogers' neighborhood, it's real easy, neighbor. You just got to go to club.baldmove.com. You can sign up for free, a free 30-day trial. You can sample all of our wares. And if you think we're worthy enough to support, if content like our spoiler edition of our movie reviews is worth it, then you can remain on. Club.baldmove.com. Everybody else, into the spoiler section.
We try to make it super easy to support making podcasts at Bald Move. Just join the club.
But some people aren't a joining type, or maybe they're already in the club but want to add a little bit of gratuity for an especially great season of coverage, or for a podcast that really spoke to them, or gave them that bit of support in a tough time.
For these, and for whatever other reason you might have, our tip jar is always open. Head over to support.baldmove.com and click the donate option to say, hey, keep doing what you're doing. We appreciate it.
Once again, check out support.baldmove.com for all the great ways to help me and Jim keep making the podcast you love.
What do you want to talk about first?
I want to talk about the framing device.
Yes.
Because I really, really liked it. This movie is basically an episode of Mr. Rogers.
Yeah.
That centers around anger, sadness, forgiveness.
Uh-huh.
It blew my fucking mind when they went to the printer and they showed us the process of making these magazines. I was like, that's brilliant. And also, like, it's so frivolous. It's so unnecessary in this film. But the fact that they do it, it makes me think that they were aiming for, like, let's make this an actual episode of Mr. Rogers. And yeah. They nailed it.
And maybe it'll speak to adults in the same way that, like, Mr. Rogers itself speaks to children. I thought that was amazing. Like, again, I was a little nervous when I saw Tom Hanks kind of, like, try to roll on for size in the beginning. But, like, by the time... A dead-on Mr. McFeely. Like, I cannot believe how they nailed the casting for all these people. And I think they did a lot of other work where, like, original... Like, whenever they were on set and, like, anything in the actual set was, like, kind of blurred out in the background and foreground as cameras, I think they were actually rolling classic episodes. But I don't know.
And they were also... they created new models in the style of Mr. Rogers' neighborhood.
Oh, really?
Like they had a New York model.
Okay. You said that I assumed they just used the classic sets. Maybe.
Oh, maybe they did for the stuff that actually existed, but I don't know that he ever made a New York model. I'm not sure
No, you're right. Like they did all the, like, you know, the model of Mr. Rogers' neighborhood in that style. They did all the different location work like that. And it was charming as fuck.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I loved it.
The other thing that I didn't expect from this movie is there's sort of a trippy dream sequence at one point where he's processing the things that Mr. Rogers has told to him via his dreams. And he ends up, you know, as Daniel, he ends up like kind of, you can just tell he's like, Mr. Rogers is in his head and he's having to come to grips with, you know, his relationship with his father. I thought it was really both strangely trippy, but also like poignant and interesting.
Yeah, there's a point in this film where it was around that time where I was like, man, and there's a couple points like this where I'm like, am I really going to go along for this ride? Because as we've discussed in a lot of different things, and most recently on this last season of The Deuce, I don't have a lot of patience for narratives where the child must forgive the parents for the wrongs that they've done, you know, and I was kind of semi-scandalized by some of the stuff I saw in this film. Like, you know, the behavior of this man's father was like, oh, so fucking terrible. And I thought that Matthew Reese's wife was kind of like, you're really not respecting the history he has with this person. And, you know, if it's as bad as what they say. And I was also trying to think, like, man, and I was like, this doesn't seem like it was the same exact kind of story that was in the article. And then I'm like, you know what? Fuck it. Like, that's not super important. And also, like you said, by the end of this movie, I'm like, I don't know what I would do if I was confronted with the fact that, like, my mom, for example, was going to, like, die, mm-hmm. like very, very soon. And she would, like, call or try to reconcile with me at the end. I've always previously just assumed I'd be like, well, okay, great. But I don't know. I mean, like,
yeah, it's an interesting question.
I'm thinking about how that would go, and like at what point would, like, you know, if she starts up with the witness shit, like wanting me to, you know, confess and repent death, like I would be so. But that's the thing. It's like, what's the risk? Like, if she does, I just walk out and, like, you know, this terrible woman has died and I never have to worry about her again. Because yeah, at the end, that's the thing. That's the brilliant thing about our Twisted Dance is if she's right, when she dies, we'll never see each other again.
Right.
Because there's no friggin' way I'm working my way into paradise with what I'm doing now. And if I'm right and she dies, I'm never going to see her again.
Right.
So it's like almost like, is there a perverse way we can kind of see eye to eye that this is the end? Can we make some kind of peace out of that? I don't know.
Yeah, no, that's an interesting idea. And it's significantly less complicated with my family. Or I don't know if it's less complicated, but it's...
You've had more contact over... I mean, not a lot. I'm not, you know...
No, not a ton by any means. I've seen them maybe 3 times in the last 15 years. Yeah. But my point being, like, I don't hate them, right? Like, I don't... Mm-hmm. It's weird, but I sort of like respect them for the stance they've taken because they firmly believe in something, and like I'm not living by the rules that they've applied to their own lives, and so they've chosen very specifically not to speak with me. But like I guess I don't feel the same anger at them the way that like the character in this movie does, Matthew Reese character does toward his father, because it clearly like shows that Matthew Reese's father wronged the entire family.
Yeah. And a very cruel and kind of vicious way.
And a very like pivotal moment.
Yeah.
A moment where he needed to be there. And that's the beauty of it. Like there's that scene in the diner where Mr. Rogers talks with Matthew Reese, or what's the character's name?
Tom, right? Is it Jerry?
Yeah.
Oh shit. I figure it couldn't be Jerry after Rick and Morty. Like, you know, right, that name's between Jerry and on Parks and Rec. And it's rough out there for Jerry's, man. You guys got to step up the game. Take your name back. This is for step one.
That scene in the diner where Fred Rogers is talking with Jerry and he says basically like your dad made you into the person you are.
Yeah.
And in as much as you like yourself right now, at least some part of that is due to the way he behaved, even if it's bad.
Mm-hmm.
And like, that's the thing, you know, after that scene, like that's the thing that spins him off into this dream and like all that stuff. And you know, I that's true of everybody, right? Like even if your parents are awful to you, the good in you and the bad in you comes from them for the most part. So.
And I know that, like, I think the thing that kind of annoyed me still a little bit is I think also Mr. Rogers would be the first one to say that this forgiveness can be on anyone's timetable. And, like, you know, he was always respectful to people that were still too angry. Because, like, you know, what the fuck does Fred Rogers know about, you know, your dad getting drunk and maybe slapping around and leaving you to tend to your screaming, dying mother alone with your sister? Like, you know,
And there's that scene when he's playing with the puppet, right? And
and
Jerry's very uncomfortable.
Uh-huh.
And just says, oh, let's get back to my questions. And he's like, oh, well, Daniel, Jerry doesn't want to talk right now. That's okay.
Uh-huh.
And he puts it away, yeah.
Yeah. And I think there's a couple, like, you know, I was only half joking about, I wonder if you could found a secular religion around the followings of the life, if not the... Because, you know, Fred Rogers... The interesting thing about him from my perspective is that he's a very devout Christian.
Yeah.
Also lifelong Republican. And I think that I wouldn't obviously agree with a lot of his politics. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, like some of the thing that jumped out at me in the documentary is how Like, he really struggled with the fact, like, when one of his crewmen, the guy who used to play the policeman in his neighborhood, was gay. And he got outed as gay in, like, this kind of, like, you know, it's not really a sex scandal. It's just that he got outed as gay. And there's a lot of pressure on Mr. Rogers to, like, get rid of him because, like, the morality. And, like, he really fucking wrestled with that. And, like, there's an interview with this man who talked about, like, what it was like to have, like, these intense conversations with Fred Rogers. And he struggled with it. But at the end, he got to the right place. And it's like, you know, he loves people.
Yeah.
And there's this line where he said in the movie that I'm pretty sure is right from Fred Rogers, where he says, anything human is mentionable and anything mentionable is manageable.
Yeah.
And that is a profound fucking statement. Mm-hmm. That is like a borderline, like, no, it's not borderline. It's like a religious, spiritual, philosophical, amazing piece of meta truth. It's I was really, really struck by that particular point. And so that's the thing. Like, if you hate your dad, you can't reconcile, that's something we can talk about, and it's something that is manageable. Mm-hmm. And if you can find your way in it to practice being a better human being and offer a dying man a little bit of solace, then that's something good too.
And that's the thing. You talked earlier, you know, about how you kind of dislike it when sort of the onus is put on the child to forgive the parent for all their wrongs. And I think it was interesting in this movie because that's kind of how it shaped up in the beginning. Mm-hmm. Like, he had been deeply wronged and it was, you know, Jerry's responsibility to go forgive him or to open that conversation. But I think by the end, you could see the father wanted to do was apologize, right? Like, when he talks about, oh, I've spent the last 15 years with Dorothy, learning how to live my life, how to be a better person. And then he apologizes at the end on his deathbed. It's like, it's both like very, how would you put that? It's sad, obviously, because he's dying, but it's also like the only gift that he could give his child at that point is like not even the ability to like forgive him, but the ability to not need to forgive him because he can apologize in this moment and then he's gone and then the child can do what they want with that, right?
Yeah.
Forgive him or not, it doesn't matter because he's gone, but like it was all like kind of given to Jerry to do with as he needed to do.
Yeah, and I was just thinking, like, you know, that was like the best case scenario for that to happen, that the father is like, you know what, I was real shit, all your feelings are valid, I was a terrible person, I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, it's like, you know, what if that had gone like badly? What if he's like, you know, did the same thing, kind of like when he showed up and invited himself over for pizza and then turned it into a pity party? Like, it could have gone that way, right?
That looked like it could have gone real bad, yeah.
But it's like, you know, it's human, it's mentionable, it's manageable. Like, you know, I was struck when Mr. Rogers asked him about how he got in a fight or how he hurt his face.
Yeah.
And he got in a fight and who you get in a fight with, his father. And like the way like Mr. Rogers was just like, wasn't affected, just like, oh my God, that must have been so painful and all. Mm-hmm. And that's what he would say if, you know, this guy who tried to do something brave and can be with his dad, what if his dad was an asshole in the last moment, then that sucks. He could still be empathetic and passionate about it, but it's brave. Like that's the other thing he said, when Matthew Reese's character said, it seems like all these people telling you their problems could be a burden. Mm-hmm. And he thanked them for that observation.
Thanks for the compassion of the, understanding how he could feel about that.
But also how it was an amazing, like a daily occurrence that he sees these people being so brave. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking like, also like, it was hard being Fred Rogers, but the rewards, my God, how many times would he go down and like people like, it's one thing, I guess, to be like a celebrity. He kind of rolls his eyes about that. Like, you know, people just, oh, I loved your work and blah, blah, blah. But like, if like all these strangers are constantly coming up and like with tears in their eyes saying how much they love you and how much they meant to you, or you meant to them as children and now their children's, like, I don't know. That's.
Yeah.
What must have been like?
It seems like he used that as fuel to keep going, keep doing the things that he sees such good results with, but never let that kind of, I don't know, take over his personality, right? Like,
yeah,
because most people, when they get that attention, they either it goes to their head or it destroys them. Like they become recluses. They don't want that kind of attention. Like, but Mr. Rogers seemed to be able to both accept that from many, many people, but also not let it turn him weird.
And there's also like a, that's the other thing is that came out in the documentary is one of his the Fred Rogers historian that works at the museum. One of the things they have is like every page of script that he ever typed. And there's a few that like when he was having writer's block where he would just like he went, Jack Torrance and is like, why is this still so hard? He just starts spontaneously typing in the script where he had this like, why is this so hard? I've been doing this so long and it's never easy. And I just feel so stupid, stupid, stupid. And like, right. And it's, but you're like, oh, Mr. Rogers, don't beat yourself up. But even he would like, succumb to self-doubt and loathing. But he had those healthy techniques, like even typing that out probably was.
Oh, dude, that minute in the diner when they just go silent for a minute.
That's the moment.
That, and when Tom Hanks looks into the camera, dead into the camera, it's like, oh my God.
It works. Because here's the thing. So when I saw them going for that moment, I'm like, this is the hokiest thing of it. Because this is from the article where like Mr. Rogers famously did this to a room full of people. When he accepted an award, he, instead of giving a big speech, he did exactly what he did. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, my skepticism of like, this is stupid, it's never going to work, mirrored what the people in the room were feeling. Like, is this guy for fucking real? Mr. Rogers wants us to take a minute to sit here in silence and think about the people who loved us into existence.
Right.
And then everyone looking around the room is like, oh shit, that's exactly what we're going to do. Because
he set his watch.
What are you going to do? Fucking heckle Mr. Rogers?
Right.
Like, yeah, that's. And it was effective. I couldn't believe it worked.
Even sitting there in the theater, you know, with eight other people around at 4:30 in the afternoon. It's super effective.
It really is. It's, I don't know how, like, I've seen so many types of charisma and so many different ways to be charismatic, but this is the weirdest, most effective way of being charismatic I've ever seen. And I think it's just this relentlessly being genuine and open and,
Has Mr. Rogers written any biographies, any of these techniques down before he died? Because I would be curious to know what his system is, right? Because
honestly,
we get a glimpse into it, but
I don't think he's written any books, but there's reams of interviews where he talks about like this in like a formal kind of educational setting, like his philosophy.
I mean, very close to Buddhism. It's very close to like a mindfulness. Sort of perspective on
he
things.
Also, and I want to track this down because I haven't seen it, he did like two seasons of a PBS show that was essentially Mr. Rogers for adults, where it's like him and his family just running around in fields and at the beach and just having conversations about like intellectuals. And
because I felt like this movie was an episode of Mr. Rogers for adults.
Yeah. And I guess that failed hard and he never tried it again, but I'd like to track that down and see kind of what kind of weird. But yeah, I was just reading an article another day that he had like a 12-step approach for communicating with children, like to take a sentence that you want to communicate and then pass it through like 12 different filters about like, we got to keep in mind that kids think this and kids are afraid of this and kids grapple with this and kids kind of freeze up when you do this. And that's why the way he communicated was so weird. Yeah. But also so effective because, again, he thought about and practiced a lot like that. What he did to that kid swinging the sword around, that's like a real story written right out of the article. And
that's the first time you see him sort of out of his persona, which turns out not to be a persona at all.
Right.
Just Fred Rogers. But the first time you see him off camera. It's a good introduction.
And you think like, again, like halfway through, it's like, oh, this isn't going to work. It's going to be the sad old man that can't cast a spell just anywhere he wants it. And nope, fuck it. It does. Because he really loves and understands children. It's a great film. If you guys like this and you want more Fred Rogers, you want to feel good, I'm going to link these articles. The Tom Junod, I think is how you pronounce his name, article, Can You Say Hero? The actual article that was fictionalized in this from Esquire. That link you can read for free. Also, please, you owe it to yourself to see Won't You Be My Neighbor, the actual excellent documentary on Fred Rogers' life.
And then if you want to know more about Tom Hanks and how he's maybe not on Fred Rogers level, but he might be a good first apostle in the secular religion we're filming. Taffy Broaddresser Ackner wrote a really good one for the New York Times called "This Tom Hanks Story Will Make You Feel Less Bad." So yeah, if you want some more positive Mr. Rogers based stuff, I'm going to link all those in the show notes. Okay, everybody, we're actually going to be off of Bald Movies official until Star Wars Episode 9.
Yeah, it turns out the only thing we really wanted to see is Queen Slim, but that hits Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
And we holidays might, really fuck up our schedule.
Yeah. And we might do some slide and stuff. We're not, I don't want to make any promises because we're kind of like looking at the schedule going, but there might be some stuff out. But regardless, we will definitely be back for Star Wars Episode 9. And Cecily and I, at some point during the post-Christmas season, we'll be talking about Cats. Thank you very much for being a Club Bald Move member. We appreciate all your support. And so glad that you have chosen to be our neighbor. We'll see you next time. Have a great night.
Would you be mine? Could you be mine? Won't you be my neighbor? Won't you please? Won't you please? Please, won't you be my neighbor?